Today's program is brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com.
This is Sherry Bayer from All in the Industry. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Listening to Eat Your Words and Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway. It's a beautiful spring day here in Brooklyn, but we have a couple guests from, well, one of them lives in Brooklyn. The other is a journalist based in Paris currently. And it just occurs to me, I don't know how to say the greeting in Swedish. Can you help me out here?
Hey.
Hey? Oh my gosh, so I did say, I did say hello in Swedish. All right. Good accident there. My guests today have written a book called Fika, The Art of the Swedish Coffee Break, and I'm so glad that they're both here in the station. It's Anna Brones and Johanna Kinvall. Yes. Thanks so much for joining.
Thanks for having us.
And I'm going to mispronounce everything else from here on out. But this book is a great concept to share, but it's also a really well-done cookbook. Tell me a little bit about, am I understanding fika correctly? So I know that it basically means a coffee break, but with food, too. It's like a taking your coffee, but with food, and it could be a noun, it could be a verb. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'd say, I mean, at the end of the day, a coffee break isn't really revolutionary. And a lot of cultures do a coffee break.
Okay.
But I think what's different about the Swedish coffee break, it's not what they do. It's kind of how they do it.
How they do it.
So it's very much a thing that you make time for. So it's not a push a button on an espresso machine and down a coffee in front of your computer.
Yeah. It's not pick me up. Or something like that. Yeah, I love that you write that it's about having, some time to spend together and slowing down, sort of.
You don't grab a coffee on the go, and that's not fika. But you, is somebody put the coffee pot on at work, and then you tell everybody to come, coffee, it's coffee, and everyone...
So
and I go to the kitchen or the kitchenette or the conference room and have their coffee.
And so it's something about is it communal or can you have a solo fika?
You could. I think the point is that you actually you walk away from whatever you do. So if you're working by your computer, you go down, you make your coffee, or you can pick up a coffee, but you sit down or...
So it's the idea of relaxing.
Yeah. And so, it could be 5 minutes. It doesn't have to be an hour or...
Well...
could be.
Could I say sorry guys, I just need to fika right now.
Yeah, definitely. You should start
to take
saying
a fika.
That.
I should start doing it more often. Can I say something get your fika on?
Yeah.
Does that work?
Sure.
Yeah.
Mm.
You guys are yes, that does. do you think that do you think that in America, because you've been here for a while, Johanna, do we get this concept very well?
I think so. I have trained my husband, and he's making coffee for me at least twice a day, sometimes even three times. And so we sit a lot on the stoop in the spring.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
In the sun. And the best times we have something with it, like a sweet treat.
Right. But it does seem like a tradition that, I don't know, a lot of I guess in the New York culture in particular, workaholics, it would seem like the idea of slowing down is less and less done these days. But is that why you decided to write about it? Or how did this happen that you wanted to kind of share this idea?
Because fika is amazing. Everyone should fika. Yeah. No, I think it came from I love fika personally. Something I grew up in the States, but my mom's Swedish, so it's something I definitely grew up with, just as a thing that we always did at home. But then sort of with the like rise and popularity of Scandinavian food, it just seemed like very fitting that people would be interested in it. And I think also, and Johanna and I talk about this a lot, like any Swede that you meet that has moved away from Sweden is like, why aren't people having fika? Because it's just, it's that such normal behavior that when you're in Sweden, nobody would ever think twice about the fact that it's special. Because it's not special, it just is. It's a thing that everyone does.
Daily life.
And then anyone that's traveled to Sweden comes back and is like, oh my God, so they do this thing. And you're like, fika, right? Because people just get so excited about it. Because why not? It's coffee and most often a sweet treat. I mean, who doesn't like baked goods, right? And who doesn't like just like really taking a time to sit down? And yeah, it definitely can be alone. It can be with friends, but there's that very social component to it. So I think that like you're going to go meet up with friends and have coffee and a baked good and a chat. I mean, like who's going to say no to that?
I'm going to try it. See how that goes over. Just start to spread the fika and I don't know. We'll see.
Definitely.
You know, you mentioned, you know, the rise of popularity in Scandinavian food. I'm wondering how different or how unique to Sweden is fika? Do they have something like fika in, say, you know, Denmark or...
They have, but I don't think they call it.
Because actually, you know, Danish has become synonymous with pastries here.
I mean, they have great pastries in both Norway and Finland or Denmark. But I don't think they call it fika, though. But I think they probably do.
Yeah, I mean,
they probably do fika, given, but they don't call it fika.
I mean, given that, like, all of the Scandinavian countries are, like, always in the top category of big coffee-consuming places. Yeah. And when you look at, like, when you look at pastries and baked goods, there are very similar things in each country. I mean, they're done a little bit differently, but there's sort of, you can see the similarities. And so... they like their coffee and a baked good as well. But I think like fika, like the word and just really making it a thing, that's very particularly Swedish from the like Scandinavian friends that I've outside of Sweden that I've talked to.
So
it is kind of something that everyone does, but I think the Swedes like gave a name to it.
Yeah, they coined it. And it's an interesting...
But actually in Sweden, most Swedes actually just say coffee. I'm having coffee.
Okay.
And then, but that's the same thing. Like now it's coffee... time for coffee.
Okay, I see.
Yeah.
So isn't the word fika like a backwards sort of slang for coffee? Because it's kaffe. How do you pronounce coffee in Swedish, by the way?
Kaffe. K-A-F-F-E.
And then there's something about fika. It was like reversed.
Mm. Yeah, it's in the book. It's, so it was... now not like reading the book before I came and doing my homework myself, but it was want to say like late 1800s.
Anna, you're right. It's uncertain exactly when the fika tradition started, but the use of the word was noted as early as 1913, using a form of slang. The two syllables for the Swedish word for coffee, cafe, were cafe. Okay,
cafe.
Were reversed, resulting in the word pronounced faka. And then evolving into today's commonly used fika.
Yeah, so when I was doing research on like the written part of the book, that sort of the using the slang of reversing syllables is actually something that happens in a lot of different languages.
Oh.
And in specifically, what I read in my research was that in particularly, there were a lot of workers that had come from other places around Sweden to Stockholm to do work. And it was a sort of like working class way of having a language between them. And that, like, you find that in other cultures as well. Like, they've had, there's a similar thing in Britain. And I know, like, in French, it's called Verlon. And it's like, city kids use this, like, you just reverse syllables, and it's this, like, way of talking. So that's, like, that particular thing of reversing syllables to say something is not something that's particular to Sweden.
Right, it's a sort of, like, slang. Mm. That is so cool. And I loved reading about, like, the history of fika and also related sort of coffee traditions. There is another one that is a little bit more formal. And you said it was like for holidays or funerals or something like that. What is that called
Kaffere.
Again? Kaffere.
Kaffere.
Kaffere. Kaffere. Yeah. And how...
it's coffee rope, actually.
Coffee rope?
Yeah.
Oh, what is that?
Obviously.
I don't know why.
Okay. And that's often like for more formal occasions.
Yes. And it's also often when I grew up, it was old ladies.
Old ladies.
So it could be that they met to gossip and, but also, And then they were like always like presenting like at least 7 types of cookies, a sponge cake, the buns, of course, cinnamon buns or cardamom buns. And if it was really like festive, they had a tart as well, like a tort as
a
well.
Yeah.
And it was funny because when we were in Sweden together for a week working on the book. And do you remember we went to like we went to an old bookshop and we found one of those like, you know, those classic like 50s, 60s etiquette books, like written for women, like here's how to be a great housewife, essentially. And there was an entire chapter on like how to do the right kefirep. And it was like, sort of, here's what you need to bake, here's what you need to do, here's like all of the specific things that you need to do to like do it right.
They have to be tablecloths, they have to be like, do you say mangled or, I mean, like, it'd have to be iron.
Pressed.
Pressed.
And tablecloth. No wrinkles.
Napkins, and they had a sugar, because they have sugar bite, cubes. And you take it with a special tool.
Goodness.
Something special for the milk.
Everything in its place.
Yeah.
So speaking of those 7 types of cookies, I am holding what looks to be a beautiful, it looks similar to a raspberry thumbprint or jam thumbprint. But it's amazing. And what do you call this?
They're called syltgrottor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Which literally translates to jam caves. So
jam
can do it with whatever jam you want to. I think in the book we use a jam recipe then later in the book.
There's something in this wonderful buttery kind of cookie shortbread thing. It tastes a little bit like aniseed or cardamom.
Good
seed
job.
Or aniseed.
Yeah.
I got it. Nice. It's absolutely delicious. So flaky. But do you ground
butter. Lots of butter.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because it's like jam well or jam thumbprint, similar, right?
Yep.
And you mentioned cinnamon rolls are a common, one of the quintessential fika foods.
Well, I think that's probably what people, if people have traveled to Sweden or they've been in like a Swedish cafe, that's probably the one thing that you would like visually identify with fika. Mm. Yeah.
Now, I can't visually conjure it. Is it similar to our cinnamon buns?
No. And I think they often bake them clogged together, like more like a sticky bun.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's not what a cinnamon bun is.
Is it swirly?
It's swirly. It's a roll, and then but you don't have frosting on it. It's you use pearl sugar. And it's very...
I forgot the frosting part and a lot of American treats.
Yeah, so there's this... so they can be rolled, but then there's also people will do like a... It's like a twist. There's no like proper way to say this, but it's like a twisty looking thing.
Yeah.
So it looks a bit more like braided into a bun. Yeah. So that's another common way of doing them. But then on top, you have this thing, like Johanna said, called perlsocker, which is pearl sugar. And it's basically like clumps of, you know, they're white and they look almost like rock salt, like bigger pieces of salt, but they're sugar and they don't melt when you bake them. So basically you get these like, you know, these little buns like dotted with this white sugar on top.
Ooh.
That's like the classic thing.
That sounds delicious.
It is.
And is that difficult to make? Because, you know, this, I also love this book because you stress the importance of making your own fika, not going into the store, not going to the fancy bakery and buying fika. I mean, I'm misusing this term, aren't I? How do you say, like, the food that goes with fika, like the pastries or cookies? Or do they just all have their different names?
A small cookies, you want it in Swedish?
Or like other baked goods or foods that you would serve?
Well, you can say kaffebröd, which means coffee bread.
Yeah.
And
okay.
That's kind of like a reference like, to like any of, that's more like bread bun related.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like, that's one expression that's a bit more general.
Yeah. Smelkaka, that's a small, and that's small cookies.
Oh,
and that
okay.
will be a smelkaka.
And, got
that's
it.
Very
smoke. I'm not going to try. But so, you know, you say that for you, both of your mothers used to bake constantly. For you, baking from scratch is sort of the norm, and that is always the reigning preference, is to have homemade fika rather than store-bought. And so how is that hard to pull off? I mean, kind of like having some food in different stages, you know, with a yeast dough, like kind of rising it overnight, or is this like a very consuming task, or do you
think that... Depends on what you're making.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say that, like, when what we've done in the book, we tried really hard that it was to make very diverse recipes. So even if you are, like, a beginning baker or just, you know, don't feel very comfortable in the kitchen, there's still, like, some easy recipes in there that
so
you can do. And then there's other stuff that's a bit more elaborate, like bread and stuff that, you know, I mean, people should totally feel empowered to do any of the recipes in there if they've never baked before, but just to say that there's a bit of a range.
Okay.
And also, I mean... That's the thing, like, that's why those cinnamon rolls are so special, because they do take a bit of time, which means you don't bake them all the time. It's like, it's a special thing when you do it.
Or you do a bigger batch and do it, like, my mother did it every second week. So,
every
and then
second
she made
week.
For 2 weeks ahead, so...
And you can freeze stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds like a very graceful way to always have something on hand for entertaining, and I definitely appreciate that. That concept. And it also goes along with the concept of just slowing down, too. You spend some time to make something homemade for your guests and take a moment to meditate on that. And not meditate on that, but just enjoy it, I think.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to cut to a quick little commercial interlude and be right back, Jen Moore.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Washed rind cheeses are a fairly recent addition to the repertoires of artisanal cheesemakers in the United States. These cheeses tend to be stinkier than other types and are often high on the list of connoisseurs. Now, Whole Foods Market has come up with one of their own. The raw cow's milk cheese, made by Sprout Creek Farm in Poughkeepsie, New York, is washed with 6-point ale from Red Hook, Brooklyn. The beige sticky rind deepens in color as it ages. The satiny ivory cheese within is mellow, with a sweetly tangy bite and a grassy aroma. The current version features 6-point diesel, which is in limited supply, so stop by and pick up some before it's gone. And point of origin cheese is sold exclusively at Whole Foods Market in New York, Northern New Jersey, and Connecticut. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hey, we're back chatting more with Anna Brones and Johanna Kinvall about the new book, Fika, The Art of the Swedish Coffee Break. I've noticed a little bit that fika is picking up, especially in New York City. We have a bakery or coffee house chain called Fika, which seems a little bit like calling your tapas bar tapas.
But there's actually fika cafes all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's a fika... I was in Australia in the fall. There's one in Sydney. It's called Fika Swedish Kitchen, I think. There's one... Like, I've done... I, like, looked into it.
Yeah.
There's, like, one in Seoul. There's one in London. There's one in, like, Toronto. They're sort of all over.
Yeah. And I just... I love the concept. And also, it just strikes me that it's a little bit similar to, like, in the Eastern tradition, a tea house, where you'd have little snacks along with tea, and you just hang out for a while. And but would you stay, like, all day at doing fika?
You could actually, if you go out with a friend, it could actually end up you staying quite long, but and because you have a lot to catch up. And but normally at work it's often like 5 to 15 minutes.
Okay. Anything about how the coffee is made? Is there any rules around how to steep coffee?
It depends.
Or is it a preference thing?
Well, it's not. I mean, there's no rules. I would say traditionally, like, they're not, it's Swedes are known for bryggkaffe, which is just like your sort of standard like drip filter coffee.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
There's also an older method, like kokkaffe, cooked coffee, boiled coffee.
Okay.
That's quite standard. But I mean, nowadays you have like the influence of sort of more southern European coffee culture with espresso drinks and that kind of thing. So it's just as common nowadays to go in and order like a latte as it is to go and order you're just like black.
Yeah.
But it's like, they do like it strong.
They like it strong.
Yeah, it's strong coffee.
Yeah, it's really interesting that the Scandinavian countries top the list for coffee consumption. That's like, and that's such a recent phenomenon. I loved reading a little bit about the history about coffee in Sweden and how it at first, the coffee houses were kind of rowdy and, you know, and then it got a bad reputation. And then coffee became like this luxury elite thing, and it was banned during a time of austerity. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was one of the kings that banned it for that. But it's interesting because all of that, like that, actually, if you look at coffee history in general, Sweden definitely follows a very similar path that all of the European countries had, because they basically once coffee had, you know, became this commodity item, at first there wasn't very much of it, so.
Right.
Only the aristocracy was drinking it. And then you sort of had these more like coffee houses popping up, which were really only frequented by men. You know, often they were, like in Sweden, for example, in Gothenburg, they were close to the port. So that's normally not known for being, you know, the nicest part of town.
Okay.
But you sort of have, I mean, it's the same in France. Like, you know, they always talk about cafes really fueling the French Revolution because they were gathering places. So it's interesting because I think it fits into that just sort of general coffee history in terms of like how that went from just exotic import to everyday consumption.
And now it's a classless drink. It's a unifying beverage, it sounds like. Cool. Well, let's talk a little bit about, we mentioned the cardamom or cinnamon buns. Is it cinnamon or cardamom or either or both?
It could be both. It could be either. But I think most the doughs often have a little bit of cardamom in them. Ooh. And then the filling could be either just cardamom.
Oh.
And butter and sugar, of course. And then, or cinnamon.
Mm-hmm.
And butter and sugar.
But sorry, I'm a huge cardamom fan, so that sounds really good.
We are too.
Yeah.
It was actually funny because in doing a lot of these recipes, we were like, oh,
can we have?
I mean, we put cardamom in like everything that we make individually, but it was like, okay, well, here's a yet another recipe with cardamom. Like,
no,
maybe we need to diversify.
Great to me. I love that you mentioned, too, that your kitchens are very minimal. You don't have a lot of gadgets, and you ground the cardamom with a mortar and pestle each time.
Yeah.
Does that make it just more flavorful and fresher? And
yeah, I mean, it's just so wonderful to just smash it, and you just get all the fumes in.
So, yeah. aromatherapy while baking.
I've always really liked, this might be a personal thing, but I've always liked the fact that when you take the cardamom seeds and you grind them, as opposed to buying pre-ground, you always get these like kind of chunky bits, which like make for this. It's not like you have a dough with like all these like bits in it, but you do sometimes just kind of like bite into a little piece of cardamom seed, and I really like that.
I think I know that feeling too. That is really fun. All right, so you made the vetebuller, is the cardamom and cinnamon rolls or buns, and then the siltgotter is the jam thumbprints or jam caves. Tell me a little bit about the finska pinar. Finnish sticks?
Yeah, they are probably not Finnish at all.
But
I actually got I posted on Instagram recently, and a Finnish guy asked me, are these actually from Finland? And I said, no. I was hoping you could answer that question.
I mean, it's like we call any baked good Danish right now. Yeah. It's like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Cool. So I love the sort of holiday treats too. There's a beautiful, by the way, Johanna made all the illustrations in this book, and they're really amazing. But this Julafton, is a traditional Yule board, Christmas table spread of pickled herring, ham, potatoes, and so forth. But you also serve certain pastries. I'm like struggling with words right now in a way that I haven't.
But Swedish is really hard. It is. It's a tough language.
I usually like really try to pronounce things, and I'm just looking at words and I'm stopping dead in my tracks. But tell me a little bit about this deer-shaped pastry.
Oh, that's not a pastry, actually. That's actually, it's made of hay.
Oh, so it's an ornament.
It's an ornament, yes.
Oh, okay.
It's actually, and also it's not a deer. It's actually bock. It's a goat, I think.
It's a goat. Yeah. It's adorable.
The male of the goat.
Yeah. All right. So, so some of these like sort of more special occasion foods that you have in the recipes, one of them we all know, and that's glögg.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a Swedish mulled wine. And is that different? Like, how is that spiced in Sweden?
It's, compared to mulled wine, it's a little bit lighter, I feel. The glögg is more, spices.
Okay,
more spices.
Got it.
Because it could be, like...
clove.
Yeah.
Cinnamon.
Yes, orange.
Orange
peel. We have nutmeg in the recipe, I think, and ginger.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of... Yeah.
It looks delicious. Yeah. I love having a recipe for that because, well, it's not the right season, but it's really good to know how different cultures do it. Mm. So one of my favorite types of food these days is the open-faced sandwich or smorgas. Mm. And, I've known it in Danish culture as smørrebrød.
Yeah.
Yep.
And smorgas is also, if you have like a whole board of smorgas, then it's a smorgasbord.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm so dumb right now. I'm sorry. I'm like stating such obvious things and you guys are like, yeah.
No, it's good. But I think, but it's funny because smorgasbord is one of those words.
Yeah, that we know.
That everybody uses that. But actually, no, but and then you're like, but you know that it actually means like
open-faced.
Like,
really?
Like,
yeah.
Because it's such a, you know, we've like Americanized that a bit.
I see. Mm. I see. Mm. Yeah, I do like make euphemisms like with smorgasburg or like just use as a metaphor for like a whole spread of
exactly.
anything.
Mm.
So some of the classic open-faced sandwiches or smorgas I'm really excited to take a look at. One of them is a meatball one. I didn't know about that too much. Is that like Swedish meatballs cut up and then with like lettuce or herbs or?
They often say that with a beetroot salad.
Beet, okay.
Yeah, it's like, but it's actually pickled beets.
Okay.
So, and with mayonnaise or it could be also be creme fraiche, I think. And
that then, sounds great.
Yeah.
So it's beet salad and then the meatballs on bread.
Mm.
Sounds awesome. what is your favorite smorgas? Both of you.
Ooh. I often am very simple. I like sliced cheese and pickled gherkins.
Sliced cheese and pickled gherkins.
Yeah.
Good one. All right, Anna?
I have no idea. I really like... God, I don't even know. I like really dark, like rye
dark
bread.
Rye.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Me too. Yeah.
The bread just has to be dense, otherwise there's sort of no point, in my opinion.
Uh-huh.
But I really like... I actually really like, and it's not something I do on my own, but I do really like having the ones with like a little bit fancier, like you have a little bit of like cured salmon and some dill.
Yeah.
That's really good. That's something I do rarely on my own, but that's like really special. If I get that, that's pretty exciting.
Cool.
But I'd say, I think my grandmother in Sweden, one I like that she does a lot for breakfast is just like sliced cheese and then some cut apples on top.
Oh.
So you get that, just like a sliced apple. So you get that sort of sweetness.
Oh.
That's kind of different. I think that's the thing about Swedish smorgas is like it can really be anything.
Yeah.
I mean, as long as it's tasty.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's usually cold, right? Like not like grilled cheese or something. Yeah.
No. Mm-hmm.
It's like a kind of fresh, fresh feeling. I love that.
In
all
Sweden,
right.
You also buy cheeses in like big quantities, so you often have like a, not a foot, but 6 inches by.
It's buy like foot up cheese in the fridge.
You know, like big blocks.
Yeah,
it's really like big. Like kind of how you would buy like a Swiss cheese often.
Yeah.
You know, you don't buy just like a small sliver of it.
No.
Like you buy something that's a bit substantial.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then we have that cheese slicer that's quite. People that are into Scandinavian design tend to know that one because it sort of looks a bit like a triangle at the top, and then it has like a little little hole kind of at the bottom. That then and then you pull that along the cheese, and it slices it very, very thinly, like way thinner than you can get with
a knife. Kidding. Mm. Way thinner than American singles.
Yes.
Ooh, wow.
And tastier.
That sounds great. Yeah, and I love the idea that it's pre-sliced, that you have that like kind of freshness rather than. I don't know, whatever. Then we have like package sliced in the States. But finally, you know, we don't have that much more time, but I love that you stress how ingredients are really crucial. Using the best ingredients are crucial to getting the best effect for your fika. And it's so important because you want to take pride and show off your homemade baked goods by only using. So what are some of your rules around like what kind of ingredients, like flour, butter, eggs, milk, What are some go-to kind of rules? Is it organic, grass-fed?
Yeah. Well, stuff? I think it. I mean, it depends on what you personally like, what your own food
what
policy
you like
is.
Best, yeah, exactly. Like my favorite.
But I will
butter.
Say, I will say that you know, yeah, it's a lot of butter, sugar, flour.
Yeah.
Like we're not talking about healthy dieting here. We're talking about. But the thing is if you use good ingredients, then you're only going to eat like one or two. Cookies because they're gonna taste really well. You know, you're not gonna just binge
it's
on the entire
little,
batch. Like
yeah.
You use good stuff, and then you have a little bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's because I definitely have had that comment like oh it's a lot of butter. Well, it is for sure.
But the cookies are small, so it's
exactly
like,
they are small.
Yeah. So it's not like 6 inches.
It's not.
No.
It's not a foot of cookie.
No. But I think I mean we both of us definitely you know. Buy organic products. We like eggs from Happy Chickens, etc.
Yeah.
So for us, I mean, that's something that in general, when we cook, those are things we strive for. So obviously that translates into the baking as well.
Right. Mm. So it's like you cook with your heart, you buy with your heart, and you serve it with pride. And I love that. So I guess that's about all the time we have for today. But thank you so much for joining and helping me explain somewhat less poorly than the beginning how fika works.
Yeah. Thank you.
It sounds delicious, and everyone check out this new book by Anna Bruns and Johanna Kinvall. It's out from 10 Speed, and thanks again everyone at Heritage. We'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
Oh, I like the way you do.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.